Welcome in, Outkick listeners. I hope you guys are having a fantastic Friday wherever you may be across this great country or this great land. Loaded show for you. Braun Strowman, WWE wrestler, John Morosi, our Major League Baseball insider, and Officer Dion Joseph, 25-year LAPD veteran. I think you guys are going to love all three of these guys, but particular Officer Dion Joseph. We'll talk about Tim Tebow and the woke police coming after him. Also, Aaron Rodgers, the absolute latest there. Big-time demand for NFL tickets. All that and more headed your direction. The podcast is available at your leisure. Go give us 5 stars. Thank you. Danny G is going to be reading these soon. And you can listen live as every single day. We are on from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. But in the meantime, podcast at your leisure, and it begins now.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
I am overwhelmed because we are in the middle of absolute Little League bedlam. We had so many different rain delays that I feel like I'm in the middle of a Major League Baseball season right now. I can barely look up. We got games going in every direction. That is what is going on in my life. We begin with a news story that over the past couple of days has swept across all of the entirety of the NFL. And I know we had the schedules come out, and there was a great deal of discussion about the schedule and who's going to win games and over-unders and everything else and best first week of the season and all those things. We talked about all that. But Tim Tebow now, remember this story initially broke that he was working out or had worked out for the Jacksonville Jaguars at the tight end position. And it since has continued to grow, even as the Aaron Rodgers story and drama, which we will continue to follow throughout the course of this show, because we cannot avoid mentioning Aaron Rodgers no matter what. Even as that story has maybe start to hit the back burner a little bit because there hasn't been any new news stories, everybody has been weighing in with their Tim Tebow hot takes. It's like hopping into the Back to the Future machine and going back to about, 2010-ish, when everybody had such massively interesting takes about Tim Tebow. And so let me start here. I've covered Tim Tebow ever since he was a freshman at the University of Florida. In fact, the first book that I wrote, Dixieland Delight, about SEC college football, which was published in 2007, I met Tim Tebow in the Swamp, which is I think it was the Swamp. It might have been a different name place then. They probably don't still exist there. But this was about 15 years ago when he was a true freshman. Tim Tebow had started to take the SEC by storm and become a super popular and a iconic figure in SEC football. Sophomore year, he is the starter for the entire year. By the way, as a freshman, Florida Gators in 2006 win a national championship under Urban Meyer. Chris Leak is the starting quarterback that year. For those of you out there who may have forgotten sort of the trajectory of Tim Tebow's football career. 2007, the Gators lose several games, but Tebow is an absolutely incredible force. And the Gators, he wins the Heisman Trophy. As a junior, he then comes back, the I promise speech, and they find a way to go win the national championship, even though they lose to Ole Miss. And remember, in his senior year, and some of you will remember this, but a lot of people out there, it's crazy to me, have kind of forgotten the Tebow era. And all throughout this, by the way, his senior year, they end up losing in the SEC championship game. I went down to New Orleans. Tebow and the Florida Gators played against the Cincinnati Bearcats in the Sugar Bowl. And Tebow was electric, transcendent in that game, finished his career with the Florida Gators, and all throughout his career with the Florida Gators. Tebow's professional prospects were a major polarizing source of debate. Everybody debated, starting when he was a freshman, certainly when he was a sophomore and he won the Heisman Trophy, is this a guy that projects at the next level? And Tebow was such a luminescent star. I'll never know what it was like when Elvis Presley was in any building. But at the SEC Media Days, Tim Tebow in the building was a rock star of a level as a sports star that I've never seen before. Same thing happened in the NFL. I remember Tebow coming through Radio Row, and it was like the oxygen suddenly got sucked out of the building. Everyone went bananas over Tim Tebow coming through Radio Row. So the question was, to kind of put you back in time, how does Tebow project at the NFL level? Josh McDaniels, many of you will remember Josh McDaniels and know him now as the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots. Well, back in the day, he was the head coach of the Denver Broncos, and he decided that Tim Tebow was his quarterback of the future, and he drafted him in the first round. And the opinions on Tebow were wildly divergent as to how he was going to be. Eventually, he comes in, starts playing for the Denver Broncos, winning games in incredibly improbable, unbelievable fashion. And ultimately, it culminates with the Broncos going into the playoffs, hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers. Broncos find a way to win in overtime. Demaryius Thomas touchdown pass. That is the absolute apex of Tim Tebow's NFL career. The Broncos win that Super Bowl game. Then, and Dub, you can check the data on this and make sure I'm remembering everything correctly. In that offseason, as John Elway is trying to figure out what is the future going to be with Tim Tebow in the NFL, Peyton Manning is let go by the Indianapolis Colts. He becomes a free agent. Peyton Manning considers the Titans. He considers the Broncos. He considers the 49ers, among others. Those are some of the teams that are trying to wine and dine him and convince Manning to come play for them. And he goes, that is Peyton Manning does, to Denver, and Tebow mania is over. It just ends as quickly as you could snap your fingers, the way that John Elway got out of a long-range connection to Tim Tebow was with Peyton Manning coming in to take over as the Denver Bronco quarterback. Manning has four great years. The Broncos go to two Super Bowls, win one of them to end his career. Tebow, if I remember correctly, ends up getting shipped all the way across the country to the Jets, if I'm remembering everything correctly. Doesn't really get used very much. Everything in his career kind of begins to unravel. And from there, Tebow ends up making the decision to go play Major League Baseball. Dub, am I correct off the top of my head in basically recapitulating Tim Tebow's career? Am I missing any of the processes along the way?
No, I've been looking it up. You pretty much nailed it. And this all went down, the Peyton Manning to Denver, then subsequently Tim Tebow leaving the Broncos in March of 2012. So
yeah, they traded him to the Jets for a fourth and a seventh round pick. And then the Jets got a fourth and a sixth round pick. So anyway, Tebow goes to New York. The idea is that they are going to figure out a way to use him. Rex Ryan, this is how far back in time it feels like, was the head coach at the time. Offensive coordinator Tony Sperano, they said they would figure out a way to use Tebow. Tebow got a broken ribs early in the year, never really played, and he was released at the end of that 2012 season. He only threw eight passes and rushed 32 times in that 1 year. Then you forget, people will remember this, that the Patriots decided to sign Tim Tebow, and he was released right before the season began. He thanked the Patriots, and that was basically the end of his career, other than a short stint with the Philadelphia Eagles in 2015. And then Tebow was done. He got released right before the start of the season for the Eagles, and his career as a quarterback in the NFL was effectively over. Then he pursues his baseball career. All right. So, during much of this time, as Tebow's tenure as a quarterback was debated, discussed, it was one of the most hot-button topics in all of sports. Tebow was suggested by many that he should become a tight end. That was a regular point of discussion. I know it's considered racist now for a mobile quarterback to be suggested that he should play another position. Everybody loses their minds when that happens. But many people for years argued that Tim Tebow should shift to tight end, that he should play H-back, that he should do something other than try to play at the quarterback position. So Tebow goes and tries to play baseball, makes it to double A, triple A, whatever it is, never makes it to major leagues, decides to retire. He's still sitting around at 33 years old. And the question is, what is he going to do with the rest of his life? And he's such a competitive guy, I believe, that he decided he wanted to go back and now finally try to make a run of it at tight end with his old coach, Urban Meyer. So, some people out there in the woke sports media are saying, oh, this is Tim Tebow, he's an attention whore. Let me dismiss that. I don't think that's true at all. If Tebow just wanted attention, he could have had any number of reality television shows. He could have been The Bachelor. I'm not sure that there has ever been an NFL player, particularly in that window of 2012, 2013, 2014, that has received more attention than Tim Tebow. I certainly know that there are very few college football players that have ever received more attention than Tim Tebow. Almost no one is turning the radio dial right now while I talk about Tim Tebow, because whoever you are, you probably have some form of a strong opinion surrounding Tim Tebow, all based on his athletic ability, because the guy's never gotten in trouble off the field at all. So this idea that trying to become a tight end is about attention, I don't buy into it. He could continue to do television as he has with the SEC Network. He could have done reality television, as I'm sure has been pitched to him at some point in time. If all he wanted was attention, he wouldn't have decided to play single and double A baseball, which is one of the places you could go where you would receive the least attention imaginable. It's one of the least sexy ways to make a living as a professional athlete. Ask anybody who's ever ridden around on buses all over minor league baseball. I actually think, by the way, Tebow's performance as a minor league baseball player was far better than most people anticipated that he would be able to accomplish. And we, by the way, did a Tebow watch on this show back in the day when he was deciding to play minor league baseball. Jason Martin, as the producer on this show, for the long-term OutKick listeners, many of you may remember when we would sit around and have those conversations. I give you all of that background for this reason. Tim Tebow is intensely competitive. I believe that he wants to squeeze every ounce of athleticism out of his body. He hasn't played the NFL several years. He knows he is no longer a quarterback. He believes, because of his relationship with Urban Meyer, that he might have an ability to play tight end, maybe for a few years, be able to continue his athletic pursuits before he's officially too old and he's not able to do it any longer. I don't see how any of this that I just walked through is anything other than a guy who is unafraid to fail and is deciding to pursue athletics as a career for as long as he possibly can, which is, frankly, what most really good athletes want to do. They're so driven by competition that they want to continue to push themselves to the limits of their own personal ability. The reason why Tim Tebow is controversial has nothing to do with his actual play on the field, and everything to do with the fact that he is an outspoken Christian. This is the truth. And many people out there don't like that Tebow is so incredibly religious in his public persona. They didn't like the fact that they even changed the NCAA rules on him because he was writing Bible verses, if you remember, in his eye black. Every game he would have a different Bible verse that he wanted to share. And that upset the NCAA and many people, and they changed the rule. He knelt to celebrate his Savior, his religious faith, and people got angry at him. He used his platform to spread his religious faith, not in a negative way, right? Like not in a demeaning way, but just to express his personal belief in his religious faith, which, by the way, many athletes have done before. But I believe many people out there, especially in the woke sports media, were upset by Tim Tebow. They didn't like his goody-two-shoes image. They thought that it was fake, and they wanted him to fail as a result. And so Tebow, despite really doing nothing that is that polarizing in his entire career, has become a litmus test, a national Rorschach test, for many people out there to express their own personal opinions on the world using Tim Tebow as the vessel upon which to do so. Now, The hot takes have been spiraling like mad over the past several days as Tebow is potentially coming back into the NFL. One of the hot takes is comparing Tim Tebow to Colin Kaepernick. This is what many people want to do because there are a lot of people out there that are desperate to mention Colin Kaepernick at any point in time for any reason. Here's what I would say about that. Colin Kaepernick's overall ability as a quarterback, much like Tim Tebow's, no longer existed. He wasn't a high-level quarterback. You don't get beat out by Blaine Gabbert if you're a high-level quarterback. Colin Kaepernick was potentially going to be a backup quarterback for a couple of years, and then his NFL career was going to be over. Much like Tebow, he had peaked at the quarterback position, and there was nothing else left for him. Instead of that, he became a lightning rod, and he got paid tens of millions of dollars to no longer play in the NFL. Colin Kaepernick is not a victim in any way. This is a bad analogy to draw because Tim Tebow is not getting a chance at the quarterback position at all. He's changing his position to try and demonstrate that he can actually be a tight end, something that all of the Tim Tebow critics spent years telling him he should do. Now that he's finally doing it, they are upset at him for doing that as well. Bigger picture, though, let me ask you this. Why is Tim Tebow getting criticized more for his decision to actually come back and try to play in the NFL than Deshaun Watson is for being accused of sexually assaulting 22 different women? I have heard way more people in the sports media furious at Tim Tebow, furious at Urban Meyer, furious at the Jacksonville Jaguars for making the decision for Tim Tebow to actually be able to go out and pursue his NFL career than I have anybody saying about Deshaun Watson. Hey, how is this guy still on an NFL roster and having no consequences so far, despite the fact that 22 different women have accused him of sexual assault? I'm a believer. And what we do on this show and why this show has continued to dominate for such an extent and why we are the most listened to show anywhere in the country for morning sports talk radio, the reason why that's going on is because we apply even standards and we don't try and hide the ball on you to use our preferred narrative and advance that regardless of what the facts reflect. The reason why Tim Tebow is getting a chance is because his talents exceed his problems. I believe ultimately Urban Meyer loves Tim Tebow, knows him well, and believes that with a young team in the locker room, that Tebow can be a good force for cultural positivity in the locker room. There are lots of veteran guys who get to hang on in the NFL, not because they're still the best possible player, but because the culture which they imbue in the locker room, coaches and management decide, leads to a better overall success than simply having the best 53 players simply based on overall talent. My question for all of you is, why is it considered controversial for Tim Tebow at the age of 33 to decide that he would like to continue to play NFL football, but everybody out there is willing to criticize him and rip him to the high heavens, but almost no one in the same group of sports media is willing to say a single negative word about Deshaun Watson, despite the fact that Watson has been accused of sexual assault by 22 different women. Dub, does this strike you as strange how much criticism of Tim Tebow there has been, despite the fact that all he's trying to do is continue his NFL career?
Yeah, and another excuse or another complaint, I guess you would call it, is that he's taking a spot away from another potential younger player trying to come up. But I don't know if I mean,
really that's literally that. Well, first of all, that's also what everybody on every NFL roster does.
Exactly.
And if Urban Meyer ultimately decides that Tim Tebow is worthy of a roster spot, which, by the way, hasn't happened yet, that's the choice that a head coach has to make. And ultimately, I think it would be because he believes that Tim Tebow can give him some help at the tight end position, maybe down near goal line situations. And also, bigger picture here, because he believes that Tim Tebow could be a cultural fit because he knows him well, and he likes what Tebow did when he was a Florida Gator. So I don't really see how this is remotely like, I would understand it a little bit more if Tebow was making tens of millions of dollars. And as a result, the Jacksonville Jaguars were in serious salary cap jeopardy because they were overpaying someone who didn't have the talent to reflect what he was being paid. But that's not happening. Tebow's not making very much money in the grand scheme of things at all. So I just think this entire story is manufactured, and some people are just angry about Tebow, and they are continuing to attack him because they don't like him wearing his religion on his sleeve, because they don't like what Tebow represents outside of the world of the NFL. I mean, I didn't hear anybody criticizing. Antonio Brown was accused of rape and blew up his relationships in Oakland and in Pittsburgh and in New England. And I don't hear anybody making accusations about Antonio Brown not deserving to play in the NFL anymore. And I'm fine with that. I believe in second, third, fourth chances. If you have the talent and an NFL team wants to give you the talent, believes in your talent, wants to give you the opportunity to play, I think that's fine. The fact that Tim Tebow is considered controversial, to me, is everything that's wrong with the sports media in general and with the incredibly lazy takes that emanate from it. When we come back, let's have some fun. Braun Strowman, WWE star, is going to be with us as he gets ready for a three-way heavyweight title, basically WWE championship title bout. That is going to be next. Loaded show for you. John Morosi in hour two. Officer Dion Joseph from the LAPD. I think you guys are going to love him. I think I will as well in the third hour of the program. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope your Friday is going fantastically well. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
He is the star of Monday Night Raw. He is Braun Strowman. And you have got a heck of a match that you are going up against Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre in a triple threat match on WrestleMania Backlash this Sunday. How bad are you going to beat those guys' asses?
Dude, I'm chomping at the bit to get in there. I'd be a liar, though, if I'm not a little bit nervous. I mean, I've been at the receiving end of both of their finishing maneuvers before, and they're not fun. I mean, these are two larger-than-life human beings, and you throw me, the monster among men, in the mix. It's set for a cataclysmic eruption, you know. This is a battle for dominance. I mean, this is King Kong meets the Incredible Hulk meets Godzilla for a battle of who is the alpha of Monday Night Raw. Who's going to walk out of the backside of this carrying the WWE Championship? And, well, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that title leaves in these hands of the monster among men.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was at WrestleMania down in Tampa, and it was so awesome to be back in front of a crowd. And I'm sure for you guys, getting back in front of crowds now is pretty remarkable. When you look back at all the, you know, I know you had the virtual crowds and everything else. What's it like to get back to some form of normalcy in performing as you guys have done for most of your career? I think you've been in the WWE since 2013. The last year had to be a crazy one.
The last year had been crazy, but at the same time, as crazy and as chaotic as it was, you know, learning, moving forward, how to get our product out, I was honored, stepping up last year at a last-minute decision to face Bill Goldberg, ended up beating Goldberg for the WWE Universal Championship, and then represented it on the Blue Brand throughout the middle and all of the pandemic and stuff like that, where I was very honored and proud of what we were capable of doing in the mix and still getting our product out there, getting content out there for our fans, when so many other entities just kind of took the low road and was like, we're going to ride it out. We, the boys and girls in the back, our production team, our everybody, the powers to be, stepped up and delivered. And, you know, times were tough, but we made the most out of it and continued to put smiles on people's faces. Now, leading a year later, a year of not having the WWE Universe there, we're a year we're underneath the microscope of that red dot, wrestling for that tiny little red dot on that camera, to walking out at Raymond James Stadium a month ago, having 25,000 of the WWE Universe back there live. Man, words don't even, there are no words to describe the feeling. I mean, my hair just stood up on my body again. I walked out. One, I was a little nervous in my entrance. Now with the new Stroman Express, we blow all this CO2 smoke out. Well, it was so hot. It was so hot and humid there. You were there. You know, Mother Nature did everything she could to throw a curveball at us. But, you know, at the end of the day, we hit a home run like we always do. But that being said, that CO2 being so powerful coming out, I couldn't see anything. So I froze. Because I knew if I took one wrong step, I'm walking off a 15-foot drop, and that's not how I wanted to start that cage match. So coming out and standing amidst all that fog, that smoke, hearing the WWE Universe rumbling, because they knew I was in there somewhere, but they didn't know yet, to seeing it dissipate, and I just come to life out of this smoke, and see everyone come to their feet, hear the noise rupture through the building, it reminded me, this is why I do this, man. It's such an energy, it's such a feeling that nothing on this earth can mimic. Being out there in the midst of the WWE Universe, feeling their energy, feeling their excitement, living through their energy, and their energy, all in while they're living through mine. It's just, it's something special that there's nowhere else on this earth. I've done lots of cool things. I've performed athletes. I've been in front of big crowds before. Nothing comes close to this feeling. It was just a little taste, a little light at the end of the tunnel, showing that things are starting to, per se, go back to normal. There's talks I've heard running through the rumor mills. We're going to get back to traveling here, hopefully in the next couple of months with stuff easing up. And, man, I just miss the WWE Universe. It's been awesome wrestling, I said, representing, learning new things, pushing forward in entertainment with the Thunderdome and stuff like that. But there's no feeling like a live crowd being there. When your music hits and 25,000 people lose their minds, it is special.
We're talking to Braun Strowman. What have you done recently to get back into, I think you told me off the air that you're getting ready to run into a gym. What have you done in your own life with your diet and your workouts to get in the best shape of your life?
You know, it's been a lifestyle change. Like, there's no diet. Like, it's a lifestyle. It's how I eat. I've been through a lot of crazy stuff over my life and battles here mentally, physically, and emotionally. And, you know, there's been a lot of things that I've needed to change and wanted to change. And one of them was my way that I looked at my health and my quality of life and stuff like that, where things that just weren't working. I've always struggled with body dysmorphia, and it's something that I'm very proud to be an advocate and talk about now, because it's such a faux pas, I guess, of, you know, I'm this big, giant stature of a man, and I'm not supposed to have emotions, and I'm the epitome of toxic masculinity and all this stuff. But in the real scheme of things, I deal with emotions and heartaches and shifts just like everybody else does. I have self-doubt. I have everything, pity for myself, and it's things that happened in my younger life that I wanted to prove people wrong. That was a lot with the storyline leading into WrestleMania. A lot of that, why my promos and things came off so passionate and it resonated with our fans, is because a lot of it was real. I was called stupid. I was called fat. I was bullied when I was younger. I still get it to this day through social media, and it was really cool to be able to tie that in with our storyline in WWE and kind of show the younger generations that, you know, bullying's never going to go away. But in the grand scheme of things, that's what really should happen to bullies. You can't go out there and do that in real life, but you can live vicariously through Braun Strowman throwing his bully off the top of a cage. So hopefully with that, telling a really cool story in that, helping to open eyes that the best feeling in the world is when someone doubts you and tells you you're not good enough and you can't do something, is going out there and proving it wrong. That's the cool thing about being a WWE superstar, man. It's more than just going out there and wrestling 15 minutes. It's connecting with people, connecting with their lives, helping change people's outfits, the way they look at things, being a shoulder to lean on, even though it's somebody that you don't even know. That's what being a WWE superstar is all about, and I'm so proud and honored to represent this company the way that I do.
We're talking to Braun Strowman. He is the star of the upcoming, maybe other people would disagree, but the star of the upcoming match, which is going to be a lot of fun to watch, with the WWE Championship belt on the line in a triple threat match against Bobby Lashley. Drew McIntyre has been on this program before, so I appreciate you coming on with us as well. I wanted to hit you with this on the way out. Your dad, I believe, is one of the greatest slow-pitch softball players of all time, is what I have been told. What does that entail? How do you win that title?
Correct. So in USSSA ball, he was voted on by his peers. He is the USSSA player of the decade for the 80s. He holds or held multiple home run records. I still go and travel to a lot of – I used to travel playing softball, but now living in Florida, they do the USSSA World Series and stuff down here. And it's one of the very few places on earth that I'm not Braun. When I walk into this place, I'm not Braun. They go, that's Crusher's son. My dad's nickname was the Crusher. So they say, that's Crusher's son. That's Little Crush. So it's really cool all these years later, because he retired in 1991 when I was only, I was 8 years old when he retired. So I don't remember a whole lot, but it's been really, really cool with my fans and stuff like that, finding all these old clips on YouTube of my dad playing ball and stuff like that. And it's really neat to be able to see, because, I mean, he's my superhero, man. Like, everything I've done in my life is just to try and be half the man that he is.
What's the farthest you ever saw him hit a softball?
Man, I don't, like I said, I was eight when he retired. I can remember shagging balls at the local field with Howard's Furniture, where he used to play, where I grew up in Denver, North Carolina. And I can remember being out shagging balls on the other side of the fence. And I can always remember my dad yelling at me, don't turn your back to me when I'm hitting. Well, I thought I was way out of the way. I was probably 200 or 300 feet on the other side of the fence in between two furniture warehouses picking up balls. And, well, I turned my back to it, and he hit a creature out there into the wilderness, and it drilled me right in the back, knocked me down. I started crying, and the sympathy I got from my dad was, I told you not to turn my back to me. Now pick up the ball and throw it in and quit crying.
Braun Strowman will be watching. Can't wait. Should be a lot of fun again in the triple threat match. WWE Championship on the line Sunday. You can watch it on Peacock in the U.S. WWE Network, everywhere else. Appreciate it, my man. Keep up the good work.
Yes, sir. Thanks for your time.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to Braun Strowman. I know his phone wasn't perfect. The audio guy is always like, hey, the caller wasn't. Yeah, I understand. That's how cell phones are. If you have a flawless way to have a cell phone work, you let me know what it is. I do interviews all over the country. On Thursday, I did an interview with Fox News, and people were complaining about my cell phone not coming through clear enough. And I was like, well, do you think that's my choice? Do you think that I drove around? I'm like, you know what I want to have happen here? I want my iPhone not to sound that good when I'm talking into it. No, this is a flaw of America. So anyway, Braun Strowman was great. Audio guy always loses his mind. I have a home studio. I'm wearing a headset right now. I'm speaking directly into a mic. Everything is going pretty flawlessly, it seems, with my audio of late. Doesn't mean it might not fall apart at some point in the future, but audio guy's always upset. Caller's not good enough. Nobody has landlines anymore. Everybody's got cell phones. Sometimes they work well, sometimes they don't work well. Braun Strowman's great. That'll be fun to watch it. Let me give you an idea, by the way, of where we're headed. John Morosi scheduled to join us in the second hour. I want to talk with him about Major League Baseball expansion, the idea of the Oakland A's moving. Are the Rays committed to Tampa? What cities might be in the mix? It's going to be a good conversation. And then in the third hour, we are scheduled to be joined by Officer Dion Joseph from the LA Police Department. He wrote an open letter to LeBron James, which went viral, and requesting basically to meet with LeBron to try to make the relationship between athletes and police better than it is right now. I love the idea. I think that's going to be a very good interview for us to finish this week with. But in the meantime, we've been talking a lot about the NFL schedule that has come out. And basically, we're almost 100% sure now, right? Joe Biden came out. The CDC came out. Effectively, the mask mandate is over, pretty much, if you've been vaccinated. There's no need for social distancing anymore. This, to me, is pretty much clear-cut evidence that 100% stadium capacity we're ready for. I know we've got it some places like the Braves and the Rangers. Over 70,000 people showed up in Texas. We had the 15,000 people for the UFC, over 70,000, by the way, for the Canelo Alvarez fight. Getting back to normalcy, really, in short order, I saw and tweeted this out on Thursday evening in Nebraska. At the Nebraska Cornhusker Stadium, they are planning in August for over 90,000 people to see Garth Brooks in person there. I think every college football stadium is going to be 100% open. I think that every NFL stadium is going to be 100% open. And you're not just hearing people like me say that. You're also seeing it from the marketplace right now. And Dub, you texted me, and I thought it was an interesting point. When the NFL schedule came out, we've got Tom Brady and the Bucs going to New England in week 4, and the ticket price on the marketplace right now for Brady's return to New England is pretty much off the charts. You texted me some screenshots of this, and I couldn't believe it. What are the get-in prices right now for Brady and the Bucs, Super Bowl champs, going back to New England, returning to Foxborough?
Yeah, it'll cost you a pretty penny. The cheapest I'm seeing on Ticketmaster is for two tickets is $1,250 each. So that is pretty unreal for a week 4 regular season matchup in the NFL. Now, obviously, it's a hot ticket as Tom Brady comes back to Gillette Stadium to face his old team, and it's understandable. But these tickets, I can guarantee you this stadium will be sold out, and it's going to be loud, and it's going to be crazy. Imagine all the Pats fans who haven't gone to a game in a year, basically. Week 4, early in the year, at home, Tom Brady coming back to town. It is going to be absolutely electric.
I know that Patriots fans will cheer for their team because it is their team. I wonder if this might be, and I'm sure we're going to have plenty of time to talk about this, obviously, is this going to be the best reception that any former player has ever received in his former stadium? Can you hardly think of any athlete who would have been more popular going back to where he was a legend on the field than Brady going back to Foxborough?
I mean, Jordan, I guess, if that even counts, with the Wizards going back to Chicago.
Yeah, I don't even remember exactly.
I don't remember that happening either.
Obviously it happened.
But I don't remember it being like some special thing. I was pretty young, but
I mean, I followed Jordan aggressively. I think partly that's because by the time Jordan, I'm sure, first of all, that reception in Chicago was phenomenal for Michael Jordan. That's a good analogy to draw. But to be fair, when Jordan went to the Wizards, it's not like he was a shell of the former player that he had been with the Bulls. Whereas right now, Brady is playing at an incredibly elite level, and he's the defending Super Bowl champ. So I mean, that will be a remarkable experience to see in Foxborough week 4 action. It doesn't surprise me that tickets are going to be through the roof for what might be the final opportunity to ever see Tom Brady play in Foxborough. When we come back, the latest, speaking of quarterback drama, on Aaron Rodgers. We'll break it all down for you. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Hour 1 in the books. Hope your Friday's going fantastically well on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.